Hi, I'm Jaina, and welcome to the Board Game Dojo with another installment of the Nerdstorian's Guide to Modern Games. I'm here to wade through the boring parts of history, bringing you the interesting stories of today's modern games. Welcome back to part two of the history of deck building, and thank you so much for listening in and joining me again as we take a closer look at the modern genre of deck building. Last episode, we left off with having crowned Dominion the grandfather, grandmother, grandparent? Not sure I'm trying to gender a board game here. Okay, let's go with the grandparent of the genre of deck building. Even if it wasn't technically the first published game that uses the classic deck building mechanism, I think I can say with absolute certainty that deck building as we know it wouldn't exist without Dominion. And if you're wondering which game used the deck building mechanism first, you'll just have to go back and listen to episode 29, The History of Deck Building Part 1, to find out. Now, let's start by diving into the development of the gaming phenomena that is Dominion. While Dominion may have been published in 2008, its design history dates back much farther than that. Really back into the 90s if we want to go right back to the beginning. And of course we do. As many of you probably already know, Dominion was designed by Donald X. Vaccarino. Back in the day, Donald X. Vaccarino was a computer programmer, and, for context, the day was the mid to late 80s and early 90s. He worked on programs for now classic devices like the Commodore 64, Atari 800, and Apple II. I wish I could say that I was fully computer literate and familiar with all of those systems, but I most definitely am not. I am taking the word of an online magazine article, which is a great time to remind everyone that all of my sources can be found in the show notes for further reading, or if anyone has corrections from a more accurate source. So, Donald X. Vaccarino had exposure to and played some designer/Euro-style games and dabbled with some game design before being entranced by the magic of Magic the Gathering in 1994. Magic the Gathering really ignited the design bug in him, and he went on to add his own contributions to the game, along with designing many other games of his own. He designed an unofficial 90-card Magic expansion set called Edge of the World, and also demoed some of his game designs to Richard Garfield, who's probably best known for designing that little-known game of Magic the Gathering that we've been talking about. Vaccarino also did some unofficial work with the Wizards of the Coast team, who publishes Magic, earning him a credit in the Comprehensive Magic Rulebook. Side note, does anyone else find it weird to refer to people that they don't know, especially if they have a somewhat long name, like, Donald X. Vaccarino? I debated long and hard if I should just refer to him as Donald, which seems weird since I don't know him and don't know how he prefers to be referred to. I almost went with Mr. Vaccarino, but I don't know, that just sounds weird too, and maybe he wants the X in there? I settled on just referring to him by his last name moving forward, as that's what people tend to do in TV shows, so it must be the way to do it. I guess I could have just called him X, which does sound cool, but I suppose that might get confusing. Anyway, back to Vaccarino being on the verge of developing something cool. Right. I think we've pretty well established that Vaccarino had a pretty solid foundation in gaming by this point, especially in Magic the Gathering. He has stated in interviews that he had two weekly gatherings around the early 2000s, one for playing Magic and the other to play board games, which were often games of his own design, mixed in with published games as well. In 2003, he set out to design a game specifically catering to the tastes of his game group, after a self-proclaimed series of duds the previous year. This game was called Spirit Warriors, where the players were building up fantasy heroes while going out on quests and fighting monsters. Just regular everyday stuff. He never tried to get it published because, well, he described it as good times, a glowing self-review if I've ever heard one. The game consisted of 500 unique cards and took 4+ hours to play, which really just seemed like a lot to sell a publisher on. Maybe Vita Lacerda wants to give it a shot? So a couple years later, Vaccarino decided to create a sequel to Spirit Warriors. While he wanted to keep the same core idea of building up heroes to go on quests and slay monsters, he decided to change up all the mechanisms. In Spirit Warriors, each player had one hero, so with the sequel, players would be building up a party of four heroes. The original game used dice-based combat, which Vaccarino switched out for a purely card-based game. His initial idea got pretty complicated pretty quickly, even though it started out simple enough. Each player would get to draft four heroes, then get a set of 8 to 12 cards per hero, shuffle those together, and that would become your deck. If you drew a ranger card, that would tell you what your ranger could do. Each character would have two skills, and you could level up those skills throughout the game. So far, so simple. The challenge appeared when it came time to apply all of the effects of each character from the cards. The example he gave was that you'd have a hand of cards, and the first card might say, deal 3 damage per level of your ranger. Your ranger is level 2, so that's 6 damage. Cool. Then you might have a paladin card that does something else numerically based on the card and your paladin's level. It quickly devolved into a lot of unfun math and even more of a memory aspect and trying to keep in mind what your previous card's damage total was while calculating up the next one, or 2, or 3. But still, Vaccarino gave it a shot with his friends, but in the sample scenario he presented, it took them forever to do the math, and at the end of all of that, most of them had gotten it wrong anyways. So back to the drawing board. Vaccarino realized that he needed to simplify the math, so it was just bam, this card deals 3 damage. No need to compare it back to a character level and practice your multiplication tables. But he also thought the fun part was in building up your characters and seeing their skills and what you could do improve over the course of the game. In the interview I pulled this information from, Vaccarino said that the obvious idea was to just gain cards as you leveled up, which most certainly would not have been so obvious to me, proving that game designers' brains just work on a different level. So in his new scheme, instead of having the same cards and upping the level on your characters, if you improved your bow, you would swap out and get a new bow card in your deck. And again, mind of a designer, he realized that he could just do away with the quests and everything else and just focus on this deck building aspect instead. And just like that, the base idea for Dominion was born. In need of a new game to try out at one of his game nights on short notice, he decided to strip away much of his original design, which was going to involve another deck of 500 plus unique cards, and instead just focus in on everything being encapsulated into cards, points, resources, actions, everything all in one deck. Starting to sound familiar, right? This led to a few of the cool things that we saw in Dominion. The idea of victory point cards clogging up your deck as the game progresses. Vaccarino quite literally said he did that for the aesthetic. Just the aesthetic of everything being contained in your deck. It was a neat side effect, but not a planned one. He originally tried using multiple different resources, but with keeping everything as a deck, he found you could frequently just draw a hand of resources that didn't work together. So they streamlined down to one resource, which is treasure. And treasure became streamlined in a similar way. If you played a card for money that you then spent out of your deck would shrink quickly. So treasure became cards that gave you money on that turn, then went into your discard pile to draw again in the future, with varying denominations that you could improve your deck with. He went with drawing 5 cards each turn and discarding unused ones because he wanted you to cycle through your entire deck and see all the cool cards that you were adding. He apparently didn't think so much about the amount of shuffling that would mean, especially for those of us that are not smooth shufflers. Anyways, you start out with a 10-card deck because that seemed to be the smallest amount of cards that could be comfortably shuffled, and because he wanted you to have 2 hands before your first reshuffle. And he wanted to keep the cards basic and boring to highlight the exciting cards you were adding. He said that 5 coppers and 5 estates was his initial plan for the starting deck, and that only morphed slightly to 7 coppers and 3 estates to better match the costs of the cards available for purchase, particularly the other treasures. And what could you do on your turn? Again, the simplest solution. Vaccarino had originally intended to have buy a card be an ability on certain cards, but figured that it was no fun to have turns where you couldn't add to your deck, so by default it became play 1 action card, buy a card. He'd previously designed a very streamlined trading card game with a similar mechanism, and he knew he wanted certain cards to allow you to play extra action cards and get more card buys so that you could build up fun chains. The last big hurdle was how many cards were available to buy and how to decide what was available. His initial thought was to have a rotating market where when someone buys a card, a new one goes in its place from a random deck. I ex- expect most of us can see the potential problems with that, such as constantly just missing out on a perfect card or always flipping a victory point card right before the same player's turn. So remember how Vaccarino needed a game quickly to play at a game night? Well, he had 10 kingdom cards ready to go, so he just threw out all 10 so he could see how they all worked and easily pick out the overpowered cards. Everyone liked having all those options, so even as he designed more kingdom cards, he just stuck with 10. Hearing about how the design process went, it really feels like Dominion came to be from finding the simplest solution to every problem. And I think that's a big part of what made Dominion so successful. It's such a streamlined and almost obvious mechanism now, which makes you wonder why no one thought of it before. But if you look at all the complexities and intricacies of something like Magic the Gathering or even StarCraft that use deck building as one small part of a fairly complicated game, I think it would take a very thoughtful designer who really had a solid understanding of how to find the fun in a variety of card games to be able to distill that down to its very essence. It's much easier to add things to try and solve problems, in games as well as in many aspects of life, instead of stripping things away. That is just not how our human brains work. And while I know that many people feel that the deck building genre has moved past Dominion and that there are other better options out there, I just want to highlight what an incredible achievement it was to create such a streamlined and simple game that is so addictive and fun. I don't think I've ever introduced Dominion to someone and after the game finishes, not have them immediately ask to play again. As your brain clicks through all the card interactions and all the different ways you could build your deck to try and exploit them, you just want to play again and again and again. Which is exactly what Vaccarino found. While the genius of Dominion feels obvious now, he had no idea if his friends would even like it, or if it would immediately just get tossed into the pile of failed prototypes. But of course, we know what happened. His friends loved it. It quickly took over their game nights, with people not having much interest in playing anything else. It also took over Magic Night, which, from what I know of my Magic-loving friends, is no easy feat. Then he found a publisher, and Dominion took over the world. Well, a fairly small slice of the world that was playing hobby board games, but still. And while Vaccarino said that having experienced what Dominion did to his gaming group, he felt pretty confident that it would do well in the broader world, he would never have imagined the multitude of games that would be developed based on his deck-building mechanism. And for me, that's the coolest part of this whole story. Sure, lots of games come out with unique ideas and mechanisms, but I can't think of any other basically new mechanism since that has created such a popular genre. And it is popular. In 2009, Dominion won the Spiel des Jahres, arguably the world's most important board game award. And just 2 years later, in 2011, Dominion had sold over 1 million copies. I unfortunately didn't have time to look up stats on how many hobby games ever achieved that level of commercial success. But especially at that time, I have to imagine that it was pretty rare. As we learned in my first episode as part of the dojo, playing cards have been around for 700 years. To find a new way to use them in 2008 and then took over a good chunk of a popular hobby is just wild to me. Now, to be fair and explain some of my fangirling, I do have a strong connection with deck building. Well, I didn't start with Dominion. One of my early hobby board games was Hogwarts Battle, a deck builder that owes a lot of its mechanisms to Dominion. And that was the first game that I experienced that immediate need to play again and again. It certainly helped that it has a campaign that you can play through that increases the difficulty as you go. But while I had sat down that day to play for an hour or two, I ended up playing for over 5 hours. Learning what deck building was taught me that these different ideas and ways of doing things you see in games are called mechanisms. And that really started my downward spiral into the hobby. And in fact, I'm still spiraling to this day. But this podcast isn't about me and my early obsession with deck building. Now you know. It's about where deck building went from Dominion, so let's get into it. But before we do, a fun fact. At the time that Dominion came out, and especially when it received worldwide recognition via the Spiel des Jahres win, Donald X. Vaccarino was not a well-known game designer, and I found some hilarious threads on BoardGameGeek with people speculating about whether he was even a real person. I do enjoy a good conspiracy theory, and it seems that Vaccarino does as well, as I have gleaned from his humorous, if not very helpful, bio on BoardGameGeek. Of course, links to those and the posts that he made about the development of Dominion are in the show notes for some extra credit reading. And now, back to our regularly scheduled program. Where were we? Right, the post-Dominion deck building craze. So where did deck building go from Dominion? Auctions. It went to auctions. Okay, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but of the four best-known games with a deck-building mechanism that came out in 2009, three of them also use an auction mechanism, which I was not expecting. Anyway, what are these games? First up, we have Arctic Scavengers. This feels very similar to Dominion in that everyone starts with the same basic deck, everyone draws cards into their hands, then take turns playing down the cards to gather resources through digging, taking cards from the junkyard pile, hunting to create food, which you can then use along with medicine that you've previously acquired to hire mercenary cards to expand your deck. The twist here is that after the resource gathering phase, most rounds proceed to a skirmish, where players will reveal cards that they held back from resource gathering phase for their fight value. Whoever had the highest fight value wins the skirmish and gains a special contested resource card into their discard to draw in the future. And here we have our first auction. Sure, they call it a skirmish, but we all know it's an auction. Want to disagree with me? Go for it. I am happy to skirmish with you on that. Also, as I was recording this, listening, you know, kind of hearing that description on Arctic Scavengers, that actually sounds an awful lot like Dune Imperium 2, which came out in 2020. So it's kind of cool. Like, I mean, every game is just an amalgamation of what came before it for the most part. Right, back to the regularly scheduled program again. Okay. And this next example is a clear auction game. No arguments needed here. The game is called Vzt, which is an F with, I think, three Zs, a T, and an exclamation point. And this one is probably the least similar to the Dominion style of deck building from this group of recent successors. In Vzt, players start with a small deck of cards, and each round, eight cards are laid out to create a conveyor belt of available cards. Only a certain number of those cards will be turned face up each round, and cards will be auctioned one at a time, so you have to try to weigh how much you want the face up cards, or any of them, versus trying to save some buying power for the later face down cards. Most cards you buy will give you more buying power, whereas production unit cards are immediately played in front of you to help with endgame scoring. But in order to activate those production unit cards, you'll have to play other cards from your hand on top of those cards later in the round, thinning your deck of buying power. When you win a bid, you discard the cards you used to bid into a personal discard pile, and at the end of each auction round, or once every player has run out of cards, you'll pick up that discard pile and deal yourself six more cards after shuffling it up. So, unlike Arctic Scavengers and Dominion, you may not even end up seeing all the cards you bought, as you always shuffle your deck and draw six cards. Any cards not drawn become the start of your discard pile. I've never tried this game, but my guess is that it's really more about card and hand management, trying to keep a relatively slim and powerful deck to help you buy the cards you need, than sacrificing cards at the right time to those production units to maximize your points. An interesting twist on deck building, at any rate. All right, Arcana is the last auction-related deck-building game from the immediate post-Dominion era. This one uses a silent bid system where players will take turns playing the cards from their hands to different districts on the board, competing to win the stake card in that district. Most often you would be playing cards face up so other people could see what you were bidding, but there were some circumstances that would let you play cards face down as a bluff. Once all players have played the cards in their hands out to districts, each district is then resolved, with the winning player winning the stakes card from that district and adding it to their discard pile. The stakes cards grant bonuses and special abilities that can be used in future auctions as they're shuffled in and drawn into your hand. And lastly, we have Thunderstone. That is the last big deck-building game that came out in the year after Dominion, and it's probably the best known. This is the first game that gives credit to Dominion in its BoardGameGeek description, describing itself as a fantasy deck-building game much in the style of Dominion. In Thunderstone, players are building up a deck of heroes, weapons, and other resources to help them delve further and further into the dungeon and successfully fight monsters, which could then be added into your deck for points and future benefits. So, it actually sounds pretty similar to Vaccarino's theme and original idea for Spirit Warriors. Thunderstone became pretty popular. I remember hearing about it when I was doing my deck building deep dive in my earlier hobby days, although I haven't yet had a chance to play it. Thunderstone also has lots of expansions and re-implementations that have come out since then. It seems to have helped cement deck building as the new, cool mechanism on the market. I think it's fun to think about the games that were in development during the rise of Dominion and wonder how many of them found their new hook through introducing deck building into their designs. I do feel like the mechanism would have slowly made its way into the hobby even without Dominion, as there were many games before Dominion that were, you know, circling around the idea. But the purity of the mechanism that Dominion managed really shined a spotlight on it that has affected many game designs and the hobby in general in such a large way, I think due to its huge early success. Okay, moving right along. The next year brought us Puzzle Strike, which looks like it might be the first clear bag-building game. It did away with the constant shuffling by switching out cards for cardboard chips that you drew from a bag. I feel like Orléans and Quacks of Quedlinburg really brought that idea to the forefront. I was almost surprised to see it occur so shortly after Dominion came out and not get more popular earlier. Personal preference here, but I think there are a lot of deck-building games that could be improved by turning them into bag builders. I don't love shuffling. I hate the idea of accidentally bending someone's card, so then I'm shuffling super carefully, which means I'm shuffling slowly, and I'm not a fast shuffler to begin with. Then I feel like my deck has never shuffled enough, so the whole thing just takes way longer than it needs to. Okay, anyway, back to the topic at hand. There were quite a few big deck-building hits in the years after. We got Ascension in 2010, which looks like it introduces drafting in the deck-building genre. I haven't played it, though, and couldn't quickly find the rules on BGG, so please correct me if I'm wrong on that. There was Friday in 2011 that created a solo deck-building experience, a game that I really want to try one of these days. I could always do with losing some more games. There was A Few Acres of Snow in 2011, which brought a two-player war game into the mix, where players take sides to recreate the French and British conflict in North America. It also brought us the Halifax Hammer, which is the only thing I know about the game. Apparently it's like a crazy, overpowered strategy or something. Wow, for someone who claims to like deck building, I sure haven't played a lot of these classics. Moving on to another game that I haven't played, 2011 also brought us Quarriors, which is deck building, but with dice. We also got Mage Knight in the same year, which is complicated deck building, along with a lot of other mechanisms. Even though it supposedly plays 1-4 people, I've heard this most frequently described as a must-play solo game if you like heavy and complicated puzzles. Big IPs also got into the deck-building game, with a Star Trek deck builder the same year, and the Legendary series following soon after, which covers multiple IPs including Alien, Marvel, Firefly, James Bond, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is the only one I've played in the series, and it was nostalgia heaven. Among many, many others. We got to use decks to attack our opponent's base in Star Realms. Then we could mend broken relationships with the cooperative game of Aeon's End. Finally a game I've actually played. From there, the genre has become more and more nuanced. I frequently hear that people are over deck building, and it's just being used too often now, and I think designers are hearing that and finding ever-increasing creative ways to blend it into new games with lots of other mechanisms to keep things interesting. Two more recent games that were both big hits that integrated deck building in interesting ways, along with other puzzles like resource management and or direct conflict, are Lost Ruins of Arnak and Dune Imperium, which both came out around the same time in 2020, if I remember correctly. Both of these certainly use deck building as a core mechanism, but add in worker placement and lots of other interesting mechanisms to create two different games that I think many people who feel, you know, maybe done with deck building could still very much appreciate and enjoy. And the genre isn't slowing down much. At the time of this recording, I counted 17 games already listed under the deck building mechanism on BoardGameGeek with release dates in 2025, and two more with release dates in 2026. And far more than I care to count of 2024 releases. Deck building really shook up the board gaming hobby in a way that very few 21st century design ideas have, and I am looking forward to seeing how the genre continues to evolve in the future. So, what do you think of deck building? Do you love it, hate it, or are you somewhere in between? We would love to have you join in on the discussion over on our Discord or Twitter. Or you can find great pictures and episode teasers on Instagram and full video reviews on YouTube. We are everywhere! You can't escape! And, I mean, why would you want to when the Board Game Dojo is doing a giveaway to celebrate 1,000 subscribers on YouTube? You can enter the giveaway in lots of ways, but one of the best ways is by leaving us a podcast review, preferably telling everyone how much you love listening to me drone on about historically significant games. But, we're really not that picky. To find out all the details on that, please check out the previous podcast episode, number 31, where Eric talks about All-Star Draft and Captain Flip. Neither of which are deck-building games, but, I'll forgive them. Until next time, happy gaming! Bye!